Stuart Hughes, can I ask you first, why and how did you actually become a blogger?
Well, I became a blogger rather inadvertently, and when I became a blogger, I didn't realise I was even become one. In the early part of last year, I was told that I was going to go to Iraq, or I was asked to go to Iraq to cover what we thought was the impending war then for the BBC. And I knew that when I was there, it was going to be rather difficult to keep in touch with family and friends. I'd worked in dangerous places before, and I knew that my loved ones got rather concerned for my well-being, especially when they didn't hear from me for a while. And I knew it was going to be difficult to keep in touch. I knew I wasn't going to have a lot of time to call them or to email them. So I was looking for quite a simple way of just popping them a message every now and again just to say I'm fine, and I didn't want to do it 100 times. So I was looking for an easy way of telling everybody at once. And I'd heard about these things called blogs and how people were using them to communicate and to publish their work. So I spent about 5 or 10 minutes looking around the internet and found a system called Blogger. And I paid a few pounds and set up an account and tried it out and found that it was a very easy and quick way to get the message out.
And you had some fairly urgent need to send messages to your family quite soon, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I'd been in Iraq for about 6 weeks or 2 months and was writing about my experiences there. But things took a rather serious turn after about 2 months in Iraq. It was just a few days before Saddam Hussein was toppled, where I was in northern Iraq in the Kurdish-controlled area, and was visiting a trench that had been abandoned by Iraqi forces, and we were there to do some filming and reporting, and we were told that the area that we were in was safe. Actually, the advice we were given was wrong, because it was very heavily mined, and we had an accident in that area. I stepped out of the vehicle and stepped on an anti-personnel landmine, which flew off my foot. I was quite seriously injured. But more tragically, the cameraman I was working with, the Iranian photojournalist Kaveh Golestan, thought, as we all did, that we were coming under attack. He ran for safety, or so he thought, but actually he ran further into the minefield and was killed instantly by two landmines. And so that was quite a dramatic and tragic turn of events, and It represented the start of a new period for my blog. It went from talking about the war and talking about what was happening on the ground to documenting and chronicling my recovery from my injury.
Hossein Darkshan, you began your blog not so much to tell your own story about what was happening to you, but for more political reasons, didn't you?
I can say that, yes. I started it actually, I came to Canada on December 2000, and then I actually thought that I was going to be disconnected from the Iranian culture and the unofficial news that's going on in Iran and shows the real Iran and stuff like that. So, at the same time, I used to be a journalist, a tech journalist in one of the very popular reformist newspapers, and I thought, I mean, I had a great experience there, and I couldn't just ignore it and stop writing for them. So I was thinking of a way to write my own things and at the same time not to be disconnected from the culture. So I thought blogs, which I had discovered a little bit earlier, could do the best for these two functions.
You write two blogs, one in English and one in Persian. Are they just the same content in different languages, or are they different things?
No, I think actually they're completely different subjects and completely different style of writing. In my Persian blog, I'm very blunt and frank, and I criticize everything that I see, from politics to Iranian pop culture to Western things to US, Iraq, and everything like that. But in my English blog, which I actually started a little bit later, about a year or so, I'm talking about mainly Iran and some unofficial news that you can't find anywhere else.
Stuart, if we can look back at your blog, we know why you started it and how it evolved to begin with, but I'm interested in why you keep it on. There you are a broadcaster, you work for the BBC, you have an outlet. Why do you also maintain this blog?
I do have an outlet. I'm very lucky to have an outlet with my work for the BBC, but it's a very certain sort of outlet. It's a very certain sort of style. I cover a certain range of subjects as required. What I can't do because of the nature of the work that we do, I'm not saying that I'm censored or restricted in any way, but obviously the news is presented in a certain sort of way. What the blog allows me to do and has done is to provide a more unfiltered experience, if you like, where I can be opinionated, where I can also lay out some of the stories that I'm told that don't make it into the final edit, if you like. It's like a cutting room floor in a way. For example, when I was in Iraq, I went to Halabja, the town where around 5,000 people were gassed to death by Saddam Hussein, and got some fascinating, interesting and very moving stories. Now, because of the confines of the broadcast medium, only some of those stories and some of that information makes it into the final edit.
You talk about it being filtered, what you do on the BBC, and of course it is, but one of the things it's filtered by is a very careful trying to check that all the facts are accurate, and also, although of course all news media have an agenda, it's very transparent. One knows, for instance, that the BBC is coming from a sort of pro-democratic, liberal kind of place, and it's British-based. All those things are known. This raises a problem, it seems to me, that somebody reading your blog, even though, you know, obviously you're the same person with the same kind of integrity, but nobody knows where you personally are coming from. So, basically, why should somebody trust what they read on your blog?
Absolutely no reason at all. why should they? Absolutely no reason. I mean, you call it a problem. You could call it an opportunity. I don't expect people to read my blog in isolation. I hope people don't take what I tell them as truth, because you talk about filters, it's my filtered experience. It's no more valid than anybody else's. I think what you're seeing in blogs as the medium develops is that the reader is expected to take much more of an active part in the editorial process, in filtering the information that's presented to them. That was always done by the broadcasters, so that when you switch on the news at a certain time, you're given a version of the truth. There are so many blogs out there, so many voices, that what I hope the reader can do is to read what I've got to say, read what another blogger's got to say, read what Hussein's got to say, and between all those opinions and all those voices, to come to some conclusion of their own. It's much more of a dialogue that's going on.
Well, yes, a dialogue, but Hussein, I wonder if I can put that to you. I mean, are readers equipped to make the kinds of decisions that Stuart was just talking about, the kinds of deciding whether, for instance, what you write is true or partially true or biased or whatever?
I don't think the readers remain still readers in this case. They are still, I mean, they are themselves writers and they are bloggers in for their own personal blog. So when they read my web blog, they're not just like passive readers or listeners to other kind of other media. If they don't accept something in my blog, they can comment on below that post that I've made, or they can comment on that on their own weblog. So it's a very kind of different relationship between the author, if you may call it, and the reader.
If we can just return to look at what precisely is on your blog, you've talked about it as being criticism. Let's take the Persian one, and certainly on the English language one, which I've looked at, there is an attack, for instance, or a criticism of an Islamist cleric. There's a sort of a very funny but nonetheless biting attack about the fact that there were no newspapers for 3 weeks in Iran during the Nowruz spring holiday. I mean, what kinds of things mainly exercise you in the blog?
It very depends on the political situation in Iran. I mean, the whole situation of Iran. If it is political, like a few months ago when the elections were coming for the parliament and the whole political atmosphere in Iran was very hyped and very hot, I was writing about politics and stuff like that. But then, as the whole society leaved the discussions about the elections and the hot debates about it, then I changed my subject. I don't do it deliberately, but it seems to me that the things that I read in other Persian blog, in the Iranian newspaper, and stuff like that, inspires me to pick the subjects. And it very much depends on the reflections and the feedback that people give me, or the things that I read other places.
And interestingly, I was in Tehran during the elections that Hossein's talking about. It's quite significant that I wasn't able to access Hossein's blog. It had been barred by the authorities. So I just wonder how you overcome that problem.
It seems to me that recently they have opened it up and it's unfiltered now. But you can't tell anything in Iran. You've been there. You know that there are so many people with so many posts, and they can't decide, and they're so unorganized, disorganized, that they you can't ever tell that if they have decided from the top to filter, for example, my website or my weblog, or it was just a personal decision by somebody with some responsibility somewhere.
But you did try to provide some sort of parallel electoral coverage through blogs at the time, didn't you?
I did, yes. I actually have about 5,000 subscribers to my email newsletter, which is exactly the same as my blog, and it sends out every day to more than 5,000 people.
Hossein, can I ask you then, do you see yourself as providing a kind of service, providing news and information that just isn't or wouldn't be available otherwise?
I think so, because otherwise I didn't have this much audience. I can say that I have more than 6,000 visitors every day, and I still keep it, even the political situation has calmed down. I think in blogs, if they can trust you, if people can trust someone, and this only happens if you talk enough about yourself, if you post some pictures from you yourself, if you talk about your family and some personal stuff, you can get people's trust. And when you get their trust, you can write about things with new perspectives. And this is very easy in Iran because, you know, everything is censored, but not in that sort of way that you might think, like in George Orwell's 1984 kind of censorship. It's not censored like that, but everyone is censoring himself or herself in newspapers and the media, which is controlled by the government. So it's very easy for you to talk about something which is a taboo, and or you talk about other things which are not taboo, but from a new perspective, which that perspective could be a taboo. Like, you can talk about hijab, Iran-Israel relationship, about Vilayat Faqih, or the supreme leader and his deeds and says and stuff like that. And you can easily attract thousands of people because you have crossed a red line.
Any of them getting angry with you, or mostly writing in saying yes, yes, yes?
No, for example, in the recent killing of Sheikh Ahmad Yassin, when I wrote something very similar to my English post in Persian, I got a lot of comments from some people, some religious people, or even some non-religious people who sympathize with the Palestinians in Iran. And I was surprised at how many Iranians who are not even religious, but they support the Hamas and the things that they do in Israel.
Stuart, do you find that with your blog, because of the interactive nature of it, because your readers write in, that you're actually learning stuff as you go along as well? It's not just you telling other people things, it's them letting you know things.
No, absolutely, and I think what Hossein was saying about people commenting on the post that he's put up is really at the core of the phenomenon of blogs, that it isn't like a traditional news service where you log on and read the news and then log off again. You log on, read the news, comment on it, add to it. It's an ongoing dialogue, an ongoing conversation. And certainly I've been pointed to information on everything from foreign policy to where to get the best artificial legs purely through my blog, and it leads you down all sorts of strange alleys you weren't expecting to go.
What one could think, though, that it would be in danger of turning into an electronic, like a pub or a cafe or something, with everybody shouting out their opinions and facts becoming rather few and unimportant in the midst of all that.
I think Hussein mentions the word trust, and I think that, that again is a very important issue and a very important concept where blogs are concerned. When anybody can become a publisher, anybody can become a pundit, anybody can become their own newspaper, the cacophony of voices can become overwhelming, and I think that the blogging community really, the peer pressure or the peer experience is very important, because it allows people to decide amongst themselves who are the people that they trust, who are the people whose opinions that matter. And it's very meritocratic in that sense, that the people whose opinions are regarded as important, worthy, insightful, are the people that people will come back to. The thing about blogs is that anybody can publish them, but you can tune out just as easily as you tune in, and if people aren't reading what you've got to say, then you're just another voice in the wilderness. I think over time it's your opinions that matter, and if people find something in what you're writing that's important, they'll come back.
You both keep at it every day, and I'm kind of still wondering why for yourself. I can see why it will be sort of interesting for other people out there, but Hussein, for instance, you've written for newspapers that were presumably read by the people who mattered in Iran, so that even if they took, they didn't do what you suggested, they nonetheless were listening to your voice. Do you not feel at the moment that you're in some kind of side room, just talking to a lot of people who ultimately aren't going to be able to change anything?
I don't think so. I think the whole concept of weblog in Iran, and the fact that they've caught on so much that there are maybe hundreds of thousands of weblogs in Persian now out there, I think it shows that this medium is being... people like this medium, and because I was trying to show the potentials of this new concept and new medium from the beginning, about 3 years ago, now we have so many people doing it in their own way, and they try to talk about their daily lives, put some political, social commentary, talk about the things that they say and stuff like that. So I think it's very influential in terms of the sense of individuality that it gives to Iranian people, which is very rare historically. Iranian, especially women, have suffered a lot because they haven't been able to express themselves and to be individual. And I think weblogs is showing the world that Iranians and the Iranian culture has changed a lot. They are very individual now, individualistic now. They're very tolerant now because they can accept the people's comments on their posts and stuff like that. And weblogs are very good signs of this change.
Do you see any signs that weblogs are affecting the more traditional media, that they're changing the shape of print journalism or television or radio?
Not yet, but because of the fact that many of the journalists in Iran are the young people who at the same time know blogs, and some of them even have blogs, I think it's going to affect some parts of this traditional thing. Like, for example, one of the very popular newspapers, which has recently been published, it's called Sharq, or East. It constantly talks about weblogs, and they translate some text from other sources, like online journalism and stuff like that, about weblogs. And even they quote from weblogs sometimes.
It's interesting to see that some of the Western traditional media are starting to pick up on the weblog phenomenon. I mean, even the BBC has sections on its online site that take the weblog format, and British newspapers like The Guardian and other international newspapers have started setting up their weblogs. I think the traditional, in inverted commas, media are starting to see the possibilities there. Whether it becomes anything more than a novelty remains to be seen, but certainly I think blogs are starting to influence the way that the larger news gathering organisations go about disseminating the news.
Stuart Hughes, Hussein Darakhshan, thank you both very much indeed.